everybody. Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. It's All About Food. Yay. And I'm looking forward to today. I can't even believe it's Tuesday already. It just seemed like I was doing this last week just a moment ago. But we're back. And this is always a fun time for me, talking about my favorite subject, food, and connecting with so many wonderful people on this planet who have great messages to share. And this is an opportunity where we get to do what, everybody? We get to tune in love. We're live, we're tuning in live, and we're tuning in love. So thanks for tuning in. I am very comfortable here. I'm in the studio. It's warm and dry. It's all sloshy and wet with snow melting outside. Fortunately, it's not too cold. And I'm going to sit back and relax. I hope you do, too. I have brought with me my Takeya glass bottle. And in it, it has jasmine tea, which I chose in honor of my first guest, Jasmine Singer. And she's the co-host of the weekly Arhen House podcast. And she's the co-founder and executive director of Arhen House, a nonprofit multimedia hub working to change the world for animals. And she has a new book out called Always Too Much and Never Enough. And we're going to be talking quite a bit about that today. Welcome to It's All About Food, Jasmine.
Hi, Karen. It's so exciting to be here.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to sip my jasmine tea.
I'll get some Karen tea.
Karen tea. Very good. What does that taste like?
I'm sure it's sugary sweet like you. Without the sugar, of course, it would be like mildly sweet.
Of course, naturally
sweet. Yeah.
Like date sugar, a little caramelized vanilla. Yum. Okay, I'm going to have to come up with a Karen tea. There you go, because I'm a big tea drinker.
I'm as well, and I appreciate the jasmine tea of the hour. I think it should be mandated that whenever I'm interviewed, the host is drinking it, or at least having jasmine rice.
Jasmine tea and jasmine rice. There you go. Well, I love tea. I talk about tea a lot. I know we're getting a little distracted, and we haven't even gotten started, but that's okay. I buy my teas in bulk, and they're organic, and it's a very beautiful process. My listeners know I don't like tea bags. I don't like brewing tea in little sacks, pantyhose sacks, and little things that we don't think about that I like people to think about and make.
Do you have like those silver kind of aluminum tea grabber things, and then you brew it in that? Because I feel like the tea always falls through the holes.
Yeah, I think mine are stainless.
Okay.
The mesh is quite small, and you could use bamboo. There are all different kinds of ways to strain it, or you don't even have to strain it. You can just have the tea sitting in the bottom of the pot and then carefully decant it or pour it off. There's lots of options.
I've never done anything carefully in my life. I'm not sure I should start with a hot liquid.
And then the last thing I want to say about tea is, after reading Dr. Michael Greger's How Not to Die, he talks about cold brewing tea and how there are so many more nutrients in the tea when you cold brew it. And I'm looking forward to the summer to do that. I'm not quite ready in the winter time to cold brew my tea. I like my tea hot.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Oh, my goodness. There's just so many things going out there, and it's all about food. And your story is all about food. You wrote a very brave, courageous book sharing a lot about your life.
Thank you for calling it brave and courageous. I get a little nervous because all of the interviews I've done recently, they're like, wow, you told everything. And I'm like, oh, my God, what did I do?
Well, but people like that. People like to be voyeurs and like to hear all kinds of intimate things about people. And then I want to think that they can relate to some of that. So my first question is, did you write this for any particular kind of person in mind? Did you have someone in mind when you wrote this?
Well, I think that my book, Always Too Much and Never Enough, is really written for anybody who's ever felt that they didn't quite belong, or that they were on some kind of a quest to become a better, more authentic version of themselves. And, you know, hopefully that's hopefully most of us listening to this, certainly on this network, on your show, would fall into that category. So it's not written for people who necessarily want to lose weight, though I'm sure a lot of people will pick it up because they will think it's just a weight loss memoir. But rather, my book is a story of finding personal authenticity. And for me, that was a roundabout journey that started with discovering animal agriculture, picking apart all of the ways that it had been betraying me. And once I realized that, was I able to look further into the ways I was betraying myself as well. And that began with food. So it's appropriate that I'm on your show today because
it's all
for
about
my story,
food.
It is all about food.
Okay. Even though this book is so much more than just weight, let's get weight off the plate.
Nice one.
I just made that up. Okay, let's talk about weight just for a moment, because I think people that have issues with food, and I think most people have food issues, unfortunately, on this planet, it's a reflection of so many other things going on in our lives. And as a result, some people are weighing more, some people are weighing less. And not only is it a reflection of our own emotional issues, but it's also a reflection of the food system today, which is a disaster nightmare.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had a number of different things going on. So you had your mom, who was always dieting, even though you described her as the thin mom, who was always slim and fashionable.
Yeah, she's still definitely that way.
Thin and fashionable.
Yeah, I was always trying to squeeze my chubby shadow into my chubby self into my mother's very thin and beautiful and glamorous shadow. And she would always try and shed those extra few pounds, you know, through means that were very popular in the 1980s when I was growing up. So I would trail behind her as she would go to her Weight Watchers meetings and her Jenny Craig meetings and her Nutrisystem meetings. And I was always playing Tetris on my Game Boy behind her, the kind of fat kid wondering when we could leave the meeting and go stuff our faces at the pizza place down the street, because that was always the routine after she would weigh in. And that really started me on this path of wondering why, if my very stereotypically beautiful and very healthy mother saw herself as so flawed, wouldn't she see me as that way? And of course she didn't. She thought I was, you know, lovely, but it ran much deeper than that. And I began to be very, very bullied at school. And eventually I was not just playing Tetris at these meetings, but I started my own cycle of trying to lose weight and then go to Luigi's and stuff my face with pizza. And it was a trajectory that I'm sure a lot of your listeners can identify with.
And the voices that we hear in our heads, they start probably before we're born, the things that are said around us, first by our parents and then everyone else. And it takes a tremendous amount of work and a strategy almost to re-script those voices.
Mm. Oh, that's really beautifully said. I think that if we're lucky and honest with ourselves, we're always re-scripting them.
Yeah.
We're on a constant evolution. I was just being interviewed this morning, and the reporter for this paper said, so you know now, you can retrain yourself and you don't go to those things you went to as a kid because you know better now. And what she was referring to was, do I use food now to try and fix all of my life problems? Do I use it as my best friend, as my lover, as my confidant? And I said to her, you know, it's not like it's gone. It's still a part of my story and it's an ongoing evolution, but I do feel like through the process of becoming vegan and then a healthy vegan and, of course, always based in ethical veganism and then ultimately finding my own truths and my own authenticity only after I shed nearly 100 pounds, have I been able to retrain myself. But that doesn't mean suddenly I'm a new person. I'm the same fat kid on a certain level that I was in 1984 trailing behind my mom with my Game Boy.
I was going to ask you about this later, but you just brought it up, so I'll stick with it. And that is, how do you see yourself today? Do you still feel inside that there's extra weight?
Wow. I think I'm constantly questioning what it is I actually look like. And on some level, I'll always be that fat kid that I just mentioned. And on some level, I don't have body dysmorphia at all. And I understand that I'm a very average sized person and I am healthy, which is what matters more to me than my actual size. But because I was treated so differently by the world once I lost the weight, which is something I write about a lot in my book, Always Too Much and Never Enough. And it's something I've written about, in other articles as well. It really changed my perception, not only of myself, but of the world. So I began to realize how arbitrarily celebrated thinner people are. And on the flip side of that, how unfortunately oppressed we are. We treat people and other beings who don't necessarily conform to what we think is acceptable. So for me, I feel very comfortable in my skin, but there's always a piece of me that will identify as the fat kid.
Humans are pretty screwed up. There's no question about it. And we treat everybody, for the most part, this global generic we, pretty horribly for one reason or another. If they're not like us, if they're overweight, if they're a different color, if they have hair or jewelry or whatever that we don't like. It's really pretty cruel world. I'm thinking too of it's not just people who are overweight. You hear all these stories about these top models who are super thin, and they never think that they're beautiful enough. So, and yet they're stunning. But it's just amazing how we can choose to hear the voices that are going to knock us down or they're going to hold us up. And again, it's all about re-scripting and hearing what you want to hear.
Right. It's also about finding a safe space in yourself and in your home. And that was something that became apparent to me as I stopped stuffing my face and my heart with Oreos and rows of saltines and Cheez-Its and everything cheese that you could possibly imagine, as I replaced that with like the more authentic self that was just begging to come out, I realized that I have the resources inside myself and I didn't need to look for it in false places, like in the wrong lovers or in the wrong foods. It was an interesting journey.
This authenticity, I want to get to that, but I want to touch on a couple more things. One is it was sad, but it was funny when you talked about how you were going to Weight Watchers and then you had lost enough weight so that you could work for Weight Watchers, but then you needed to go on Jenny Craig. That's like the ultimate in not being authentic.
Oh my God. Yeah. When I was in my early 20s, I was an actress. I was an aspiring actress, we'll say, in New York City. I did not really get many roles. There weren't so many roles for me. And I became a little bit enamored with this casting director who was teaching a class that I took on monologues. And she told me I needed to lose a lot of weight, which of course shattered me, but she was right. That was a big reason, so to speak, why I wasn't getting roles. And so she asked me if I wanted to join Weight Watchers with her. And I very nonchalantly said, yeah, sure. Of course, inside I was like petrified because I had grown up on Weight Watchers going up and down, up and down. But I joined, and partly because I was still closeted to myself at the time and didn't realize that a big impetus for me was that I was trying to impress her because I was hugely crushing on her. I lost enough weight that I was able to get a job there, but I kind of finagled my way through that because I still weighed too much for the under 25 category that I was in that they considered normal, a normal weight. I was like 150 and I'm 5'4". But it was okay to be a senior citizen and weigh that at the age I was, which was 24. So I got a job and I was weighing people in. I was suddenly that person who, held these women's lives in their hands, or so they felt, and they would take off their hat and their scarf and their earrings and anything they could, as I would tell them, if they gained or lost 0.2 ounces. Mm. So in order to keep my job, I needed to go to regular weigh-ins for the staff, but I was gaining weight again. And so I kept skipping my staff weigh-ins until finally I was cornered. Jasmine, you haven't done your weigh-in in a few months. And I said, oh, yeah, you're right. I'll go. But I knew that I was screwed, partly because I was eating lots of candy and I was binging after, you know, on Tuesday nights. Tuesday nights was my binge night. It was all very disordered, and I had not yet gotten to the systemic reason behind my overconsumption and my, you know, inappropriate relationship with eating. So I did what I figured my mother would do, and I joined Jenny Craig to lose the weight. And you know what's so sad? I was just about vegan. I went vegan later that year, but I wasn't vegan yet. So as a vegetarian, I at the time, Jenny Craig, which gives you all of these foods that are already prepared, they only had one vegetarian option, maybe two at the time. So that was all I ate while I was on Jenny Craig, while I was working for Weight Watchers. Like, and if you opened my cabinets,
that's not cheap either.
No, no. I think my mother paid because she was really excited that I wanted to lose weight.
Yeah. So. And then there's a happy, I don't want to say ending, but maybe a happy new beginning where you found plants. And all these wonderful things happen for you.
Right. I became a vegetarian when I was about 19, and I was a theater student living in Philadelphia. And I did it mainly because I was seeking an identity. But I used to introduce myself as a vegetarian, but not the mean kind, which I think I was referring to vegans. And little did I know my career would be as a professional vegan, basically. And so when I was 24, right after that whole Weight Watchers incident happened, a friend of mine showed me some footage of factory farming, and I hadn't realized that how utterly oppressed the animals that we exploited for their byproducts were, namely in the egg industry and in the dairy industry. And I connected it, as I have heard you do, Karen, I connected it a lot to my own personal feminism and my own experience feeling violated, feeling as though my own female reproductive parts had been violated. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I didn't feel I could take part in anymore. So I went vegan.
Yay. And
right.
And you've done a lot more than that. You haven't just gone vegan. You've gone healthy vegan, and you're sharing this message with many, many people.
I appreciate that. I didn't go healthy vegan immediately. In fact, I gained a lot of weight when I went vegan because I, once again, simply replaced my negative body shaming and my disordered eating mentality with the vegan version. And I almost felt it was my moral imperative to go try every cupcake, every vegan cupcake and vegan pizza and vegan brownie that New York City had to offer. So, and I was also working as an animal rights activist, and I almost had a, you know, kind of, this is what I do to take care of myself attitude about it. But that was, you know, wrong, because what I really should have been doing, and I came to learn when I was 30 and I finally did it, was feeding myself first, was taking care of my own animal rights in order to most effectively advocate for non-human animals. So when I was 30, I was told I was on my way to heart disease, and I was a long time. I was a vegan at the time, and of course, and I was shocked, and I weighed in at, you know, in the 220s. And I was very achy all the time. I had adult onset acne. I had depression frequently. I was just tired and lethargic. I never really felt well. I would get boils. It was bad. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I never expected the words heart disease to come out of my doctor's mouth to me, ever. So that was around the time that somebody showed me another documentary that changed my life, which was Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. And it was about a man who restored himself to health from the power of juicing. And I began juice fasting. And while I was eating in between juice fasts, I went back to a very wholesome, unprocessed diet. I was following a lot of the Eat to Live literature at the time, and my pounds melted off. The impetus was not weight loss. It was physical and mental health.
Ooh. Well, you said something important, and I think you said it, I'm going to repeat it in my own words, which is, if you want to make a difference and be an activist, you have to take care of yourself first. You cannot do the work unless you really, you can't even live successfully, live your own life, unless you are number one. People talk about being selfish, and I think it's really important to be selfish when you take care of yourself, because then you can live your life to the fullest and you can make a positive difference in any direction you want to go. You can't do it if you're fat, sick, and nearly dead.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who was recently, I was talking to her about something, and I said, I probably sound really self-centered. And she said, isn't that a funny expression, self-centered? Shouldn't we be centered around ourselves? And exactly. It was kind of another way of saying what you're saying now. And I was like, yeah, I mean, of course you want to be a kind, generous person, but we should have a degree of self-care that supersedes all of that, because we're not going to be anything for anyone else unless we are paying attention to our body's needs and our heart's needs. And to me, the best way to do that is through a healthy vegan diet, and that to me is the most ethically sound. That to me is an extension of my worldview, but it's not only an extension of my worldview about the treatment of other animals, but it's an extension of my worldview of kindness to my own self as well.
I want to go talk for a minute about juicing. I'm a big proponent of juicing. I know the green juice was part of what saved my life when I went through advanced ovarian cancer almost 10 years ago.
Wow, congrats.
And thank you. And, you know, it's all about being selfish. It's all about food. And I've been a vegan for almost 28 years, so I had already been a pretty healthy vegan, but that's a whole other story. But juicing is a really important thing, and fasting can be important too, and that makes me, that reminds me of something in your book when you were talking about directing West Side Story at a camp for one summer, and you decided after being so bullied to actually, it sounded like a water fast almost, but it wasn't. It was actually pretty dangerous. And I would like to just kind of clarify the difference between healthy fasting and not healthy fasting.
You know, it's so funny. You are so good at asking questions.
Thank
you. You are just going to all of the hard parts. That was a very painful moment in my life. And yeah, I was not fasting. I later in my life, 10 years later, I was fasting, but at the time it was much more of an anorexic mentality, and it didn't last for that long. That was indeed one summer when I had a terrible attitude about the whole thing. It was coming from a place of sickness physically and mentally, and it was because I, like I said at the beginning of this interview, I tend to not be so careful about things. I tend to be always too much and never enough. And at that moment in time, I was directing West Side Story at a sleepaway camp, and I was being so bullied by my classmates my peers, I should say, that I felt this was the only bit of control I had. And of course, it's not control at all. So I stopped eating, but I was still having a lot of coffee with creamer because I wasn't vegan yet. And I was really falling apart. My period stopped. My hair fell out. I had really long hair at the time, and this huge chunk of hair fell out right in the front. And I really definitely want to make the distinction between that, which was anorexia, and healthy fasting. And I'm also a very strong proponent of fasting. I think that that's a great way to heal our bodies, not just juicing, but water fasting, which is, I have done as well, water fasting. And I don't think that everyone who comes from a background of disordered eating, as I had, should go the fasting route, mm-hmm. or even the juicing route. I'm not sure it's always appropriate for people. But for me, I had come around so much mentally and physically that I went in with my eyes open. And I not only had shed the weight, but I had shed the previous misconceptions of health. So I went into it from a place of healing and not a place of disorder.
So just a clarification on healthy water fasting. I did one for about 3 weeks in 2000. And there are some critical things. If you're ever considering a water fast, I know I've talked about it on this program before. It's not for everyone. And it shouldn't be used for weight loss, really. You should be on a healthy diet before you start your fast.
Yeah.
And you really need to rest. You can't be directing West Side Story when you're not eating.
No.
You
no,
have to rest.
I'm really glad you said that. By the time I did a water fast in my 30s, I was not doing it for weight loss at all. In fact, I was already like at a pretty good weight. It wasn't, of course you lose weight, but then you know, you'll put it back once you start reincorporating solid foods. But that's a really good point. I think it can be an important tool and frequently should be medically supervised.
Yeah. Okay, we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about the joyfulness of being vegan. So I want to know, what are your favorite foods?
My favorite foods. It's funny, whenever anyone asks me that, the first thing that comes to mind is chickpeas, but
yeah.
I don't even eat them that much, so I need to incorporate more joy back into my life. I just love them. I love the kind of meatiness of them, if I'll just use that word there. And I am a sucker for just a macro plate, which is pretty much what I just ate for lunch, although I made it myself. So some, you know, steamed tofu and veggies and brown rice with some tahini drizzled on top and nutritional yeast. And another favorite food of mine are just really lovely sweet grapes.
Mm.
I like Concord grapes when they're in season. That's such a treat. And the season lasts like 8 minutes. So when mm-hmm. you get it, it's like, I got gold.
Well, Concord grapes, they taste like Welch's. I remember when I was a kid and I had to have Welch's grape jelly. And then I never had a Concord grape until years later. I went, oh, this is like Welch's. Mm-hmm. Yummy.
Right. Yeah. We moved out of Brooklyn, my partner and I, about a year ago, and we had a small backyard when we were living in Brooklyn, and we didn't even know until they came up, but we had grapes
there.
Wow. It was really good.
Yeah. That's amazing. Okay. Do you have a sweet treat from time to time, and are there any that you prefer?
I do. Yeah. I really like to make brownies with spinach in them, sweetened by dates and black bean brownies, I should say. So, mm-hmm. And I'll add, you know, cocoa, always fair trade, slavery free cocoa as the chocolate. So I really like making those, and people often make fun of me when I talk about it, and then they eat it and they're like, this is really good.
Exactly. It's really good. There are so many great things that we can make from sweet to savory, from whole foods. We've kind of gotten on this path as a society of using low quality ingredients, salt, sugar, and fat. And when we get back to whole foods, you can have your cake and eat it too, put some black beans in it, and you don't even know. It's just yummy.
You could throw spinach in desserts and you will just not be able to taste it. I mean, it's similar to like when you're making smoothies, you could put so many pieces of spinach in it and not taste it, that it's the same with desserts, especially with kids. I don't have kids, but I have a niece who I'm fairly obsessed with, and I love to just sneak greens into her food without her knowing.
Well, at some point she should find out, because she should know how wonderful greens are for her.
You're right.
And for all of us. Well, Jasmine, thank you for joining
me
on It's
All About
Food.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing and for all that you're talking about loudly and clearly. We need more voices like yours.
Turn the volume up, everybody. Let's talk about food. Okay, all the best to you and your book, Always Too Much and Never Enough. I'm going to take a break with my Jasmine tea, and take care.